Word on Health, the report with its finger on the pulse of popular medicine with Paul Pennington. Word on Health, for your very best of health.
The National Institute for Health and Care Research, Innovate UK, the Advanced Therapy Treatment Centre Network, and the Cell and Gene Therapy Catapult have announced a £17.9 million strategic initiative to enhance the UK environment for advanced therapy medicinal product clinical trials. To get a greater understanding of what's meant by advanced therapies, I spoke with Jacqueline Barry, the Chief Clinical Officer of the Cell and Gene Therapy Catapult.
It's an umbrella term, I suppose. It would cover things that other people would call cell and gene therapies. Cell therapies, you're taking usually someone's own cells and you're manipulating them in such a way that they can be expanded or they can cause some sort of regeneration within the person. Gene therapies are a class of medicines where you take a gene of specific interest. There might be a gene missing in somebody's whole genetic makeup, and you manipulate that gene back into the genetic makeup, and then the disease that was caused by the missing gene is reversed, essentially. Likewise, if there's a gene that's causing problems, you can remove that gene. So there's a number of different ways that you can use gene therapies, but they're really quite transformative, you know, with the potential to cure, because you're actually reversing a damaged genetic profile.
Give me some idea of the landscape of where we are with advanced therapies in development.
There's more than 1,000 products in clinical trial globally, and the approval by the regulators and by the commissioners is accelerating. We're seeing approximately 10 to 20 products in the next year or two that are due to be released for use within the NHS. So we have to ensure that we have a system that can deliver the products to the patients.
Which disease areas show the most promise in being tackled by advanced therapies?
The most products that have been trialled and released for routine use are what we call CAR-Ts. And these have been primarily focused on blood cancers. And the next generation of these products is coming. CAR-Ts are also being used in trial to look at autoimmune diseases. And those certainly are the ones that are coming next. The other group of products are the gene therapies, and these have been to treat mainly rare genetic disorders, quite often in children. Things like Strymphalus, what we would call the boy in the bubble disease, is what a lot of people know it as. But there's a lot of these rare genetic disorders where there's treatments becoming available month after month. What we're also seeing is the development of these type of products for much more prevalent diseases. There was a recent approval of a product that is for the treatment of sickle cell or thalassemia. You know, so we're moving into a more prevalent disease cohort. And also, much further down the line, this cell therapy product's been developed for type 1 diabetes, for instance.
It's recognised that the UK leads the way in terms of researching advanced therapies. How will this new funding be spent?
This new funding is a continuation of funding we've already had. So the previous 6 years has been funded for this Advanced Therapy Treatment Centre network of hospitals and trusts across the whole of the UK who are working together to look at the barriers to the adoption of these therapies. It's so important because these truly are transformative, potentially curative, but they are really quite different from a normal pharmaceutic. They're quite difficult for the NHS to adopt. So they're working together to look at procedures and policies for the adoption of these therapies into the NHS. We're going to look at how do we increase the knowledge of the staff in the NHS. So, you know, training and education, examine how we can make the UK more attractive for clinical trials to make it slicker and leaner so that patients get access to these therapies earlier. We're going to look at what we can do with NHS data to look at whether the products are efficacious, but also to help us identify patients who receive these therapies. And we'll also look at logistics, how we can move these products about in as efficient a way as possible within the NHS.
My grateful thanks to Jacqueline Barry, Chief Clinical Officer of the Cell and Gene Therapy Catapult. To find out more, visit our website, wordonhealth.com. That's wordonhealth.com.
Word on Health, for your very best of health.
Cavernomas are lesions in the brain or spine which are made up of abnormal blood vessels. They're said to resemble raspberries and can cause stroke and epilepsy when they become active and bleed into surrounding brain and spinal tissue. It's estimated about 1 in every 600 people across the UK has a cavernoma that does not cause symptoms. Every year, around 1 person in every 400,000 is diagnosed with a cavernoma after suffering a stroke or other cognitive deficits following a brain brain hemorrhage. Jay Davies, who lives with cavernomas, donates her time to the charity Cavernoma Alliance UK.
Every single person you meet would have a different array of symptoms. They range from eye disturbances to fatigue, headaches, weakness of the limbs, and there's so many more that are apparent, as well as seizures as well. Some people find out accidentally. They may have, for example, an MRI, which is for something different, and then they find out they've got one. But generally, most people have a seizure, for example. That's the most common symptom, to then have an MRI and find out. And then other symptoms like headaches, which indicates that you've had a hemorrhagic stroke or a leakage from the cavernoma.
What puts you at risk of developing cavernomas?
There's nothing to show that lifestyle, anything like that, changes whether you're going to have them or not. There's two types of cavernomas. There's sporadic, which means somebody has one and that's it, and there's no research to show why that grew or has been there since birth. And then there's the second type, which is called familial cavernoma. It's genetic. There's three types of mutation. They're varied strains, so they change how many you might have. CCM1, which is the least, I guess, serious strain, they might have a couple of cavernomas. Whereas CCM3, which is the most severe strain, they could have 20. For that, it's hereditary, therefore it's come from your parents.
Are you more likely to develop them with age, or if you're male or female?
There's no statistics to show if there's a specific gender, age, where they become either symptomatic or where they form. They think that you're more likely between the age of 20 and 40, but there's so many people that would have them way before that, and there's so many people that would find out after that as well.
What's the diagnosis and treatment like?
The length of time for diagnosis can vary of symptoms, where you are in the country, etc. Once they've found that it's a cavernoma, you're then given the opportunity to have genetic testing, which is where they'll find out whether it's hereditary or a sporadic one. The three options for you to have treatment is to have surgery, which generally falls under somebody who has severe symptoms. They have a lot of discussions with a neurosurgeon if they think it's doable and what the risks are. And then there's the wait and see approach. You may have mild deficits, so they'll wait and see if they think things are progressing. And then people are offered radiotherapy as well.
Outside of specialists, the understanding of cavernomas in the wider medical community is not great, which you and the neurospecialists who support the charity are working to progressively change. Outside of a medical setting, what are the challenges that people living with cavernomas face?
One of the biggest challenges is the awareness, which can impact on your diagnosis, your treatment, how you're treated within the workplace. And then it's the stigma that comes with it as well. People don't understand what it means. So when you say, I've got abnormal clusters in my brain, the way that you're reacted can be quite extreme, which some people may find really difficult. I don't think everybody feels comfortable to even explain what it means, which then impacts on them mentally. It's very easy for people to feel alone with this condition. Cavernoma Alliance is great because it has that community. So we hope that that helps people to feel more supported and less alone.
My grateful thanks to Jay Davies. To find out more and link through to Cavernoma Alliance UK, visit our website, wordonhealth.com. That's wordonhealth.com.
Word on Health, your personal prescription for your very best of health. High blood pressure, or hypertension as it's otherwise termed, is responsible for about half the heart attacks and strokes in the UK. It's wrongly thought of as an older person's health problem. It can develop at any age, and recent data from the Office of National Statistics has revealed a considerable number of young people aged 16 to 24 unknowingly have risky high blood pressure. I spoke to Dr. Pauline Swift from the charity Blood Pressure UK.
High blood pressure was a complex interaction between our genetics, our epigenetics, and our environment. And the environment we're talking about here in relation to high blood pressure is diet. There is increasing obesity in children as well as young adults, very strongly linked to an increased risk of high blood pressure. And then as you go up the age group bands, our whole population's blood pressure is shifting upwards because of poor diet, highly processed foods containing salt and fat and sugar. I think it's a poverty related thing as well, because if you look at that ONS data, it is more associated with a lower socioeconomic status, and affordability of good, healthy food is simply out of reach for a lot of people. It's difficult to eat a healthy diet that doesn't have ultra processed foods.
A key thrust of your campaigning work has been for people of all ages to know what their blood pressure is and to follow the guidance on how often they should have it rechecked.
From maybe 16 onwards, certainly from 20, and from the age of 30 to 40, every single individual in the UK should be having their blood pressure checked, because the vast, vast majority have no symptoms. And you can run years and years and years of symptomless high blood pressure without having it checked. So get your blood pressure checked.
There are now a range of do-it-yourself devices. What's your thoughts on these?
There's lots of apps and wearable devices that are not yet validated for proper blood pressure checking. The Blood Pressure UK website or the British and Irish Hypertension Society website, they're both good for looking to see that you've got a validated machine.
There are a range of lifestyle measures we can take to reduce the risk of high blood pressure. As part of that, one of Blood Pressure UK's key thrusts has been to alert us to the dangers of eating too much salt in our diet.
Salt is a major dietary environmental risk factor for high blood pressure. And even if you're on medications, you will benefit from reducing your salt intake because it makes your medications more effective. So it's very important to cut it out.
And finally, Dr. Swift, if you have been diagnosed with high blood pressure and are on treatment, how important is it to stay on your medication?
It is vitally important that once you're on established treatment that you continue taking it. This is a controllable disease if you have healthy lifestyle, modify your diet and take your tablets. If you suddenly stop taking your medications, then your blood pressure will shoot up to what your baseline level of hypertension is, and that can be extremely dangerous. It's a really bad idea.
My grateful thanks to Dr. Pauline Swift. To find out more about high blood pressure and to link through to Blood Pressure UK, log onto our website, wordonhealth.com. That's wordonhealth.com.
Word on Health, for your very best of health.
The UK's leading toilet roll brand has partnered with the charity Bowel Cancer UK, joining forces with a host of retailers to increase awareness of the symptoms of the UK's fourth most common cancer and our second biggest cancer killer. Survival rates are boosted by early diagnosis, but fewer than 4 in 10 people are diagnosed at the early stages. Changes in bowel habit and blood in your poo are two bowel cancer symptoms that happen while you're on the toilet. So having bowel cancer symptoms placed on loo roll packaging, it's hoped, will boost awareness, which recent research has shown is low. Dr. Lisa Wild is Bowel Cancer UK's Director of Research and External Affairs.
45% of people can't name a single symptom of bowel cancer. Half of UK men were unable to spot any signs of bowel cancer compared to 36% of women. One of the key red flag symptoms is blood in your poo. Only a third of people are aware of it. And there's very low awareness in the other main symptoms.
This new partnership that was launched in a TV advertising campaign with Sharon Osbourne as its figurehead is aiming to reach more than 10 million households. With around 43,000 people diagnosed with bowel cancer each year, it's imperative that more of us are diagnosed early. The NHS has, for a number of years, conducted a bowel cancer screening programme with older people who are at heightened risk. But statistics show not nearly enough of us take up the opportunity to be screened.
If you get a screening test through the post, please take part, because if you pick up bowel cancer through screening, you will more than likely detect it at that earlier stage where it can be treated and it's curable. But it also can find polyps, which are non-cancerous growths, which may develop into bowel cancer in the future. So the screening test can be preventative too.
As I mentioned, bowel cancer is most commonly associated with older people, but not exclusively. So raising awareness in the general population of bleeding from your bottom or blood in your poo, persistent and unexplained changing bowel habits, unexplained weight loss for no obvious reason, or a pain or lump in the tummy, and unexpected fatigue are important for all of us to be aware of and act upon.
The vast majority of them are aged over 50, but 2,500 people who are diagnosed are under 50, and and it tends to be fairly equally split between men and women.
My grateful thanks to Dr. Lisa Wilde from Bowel Cancer UK. To find out more and to connect through to the charity, visit our website, wordonhealth.com. That's wordonhealth.com.
Keeping you in touch with the health and lifestyle issues that matter. This is Word on Health with Paul Pennington.